Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's Thursday, September 29th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy of the Guardians got back on the winning side of things last night in a game that looked a lot like Tuesday's series opener. Had a rain delay, had extra innings, and this time it was Amed Rosario coming through in the 10th inning with an RBI single with the bases loaded as a pinch hitter. They wanted to get Amed off of his feet. He saw one pitch and the game was over. Pretty much how you want to draw it up there in extra innings. Guardians come through, against Tampa Bay, a team that, you know, the first two games of this series have been really close, really exciting games.
Yeah, definitely. I was talking to Tristan McKenzie after the game, and he said he sees a lot of the Guardians in the Rays. Mm-hmm. That strong bullpen, and kind of timely hitting. Good starting pitching. So they really, they're well matched. Cleveland has the series edge 3-2 right now. With the final game tonight.
Yeah, it's really come down to the bullpens in both games, and who can sort of outlast who, because last night there weren't a lot of hits going around. In the first game of the series, the Guardians out-hit Tampa Bay, but couldn't come through with the big hit. Last night you got Gabriel Arias hitting his first career home run. That sort of tied the game up. That was kind of unexpected. And then, really the bullpens battled it out there until the 10th inning, when kind of a questionable decision, I think, Kevin Cash made when he issued an intentional walk to Andrés Giménez to lead off the bottom of the 10th. The game-winning run was already at second base, but that just put Arias in a position where he could get down a sacrifice bunt. They walked. There was an intentional walk to Will Brennan, and that pretty much forced Tito's hand to send Amed Rosario up there in a pinch hitting role, and he winds up winning it.
Yeah, I was surprised. I don't know what the strategy was. Obviously he wanted to face Arias there, rookie. In that situation, maybe try to get him to hit into a double play. Maybe he didn't think the kid could bunt, or that Tito would put the bunt play on, but it worked to perfection. I mean, he bunts, advances the runners, Brennan gets walked intentionally, and Rosario one pitch, like you said, and the game is over.
Yeah, I think maybe it was a case of Tito zigging when Cash thought he was going to zag. I think the two of them know each other so much and know each other so well. I bet you Cash was sitting back in that dugout going, "Well, Tito will never bunt with the rookie at the plate." He and maybe he thought he could catch the Arias being aggressive, having already hit a home run in the game previously. But Arias said, the call came from the bench, came from Tito to bunt, and he executed. Got to give him credit for executing in that situation, because how many times have we seen over the last three, 4 years you know, young guys in the in Cleveland's lineup not being able to execute in that situation.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, he had hit the home run in the third inning to start the third. Then he struck out the next two times. So maybe that's what, you know, what Kevin Cash was looking at. That was, maybe that's what he was counting at. You know, a rookie being over aggressive, either the strikeout or kind of hitting to a double play there.
Yeah, it's the 28th win in the last at bat for this Guardians club. That's a new franchise record for a season, single season. It was their seventh walk-off plate appearance. The third consecutive walk-off plate appearance for Ahmed Rosario. He's got the Guardians' last three walk-offs. And most recently before that, I think September 17th, he had one. So, yeah, it worked out kind of. That last bottom of the 10th inning sort of came really quickly. You got to see Emmanuel Class A again. Are you worried that Class A pitching that ninth inning, are they overworking him? Is this guy's arm's going to fall off? I swear. I really thought that they were going to try and rest him over this last homestand. But you saw Class A in the ninth. You saw Karinchak in the 10th. And then Tito made the comment afterwards. Karinchak's kind of the guy you're sort of built for that extra innings with the runner on base, because when you need a guy who can strike a guy out and miss bats, that's Karinchak coming out of the pen in extra innings.
Yeah, definitely. He showed that last season. He showed that ability last season. And he's shown it again right now, Joe. I think he's got much better control this time around than last season when he tended to struggle a bit. But yeah, with the guy in second base, what he strikes out the side, three swinging strikes, and he freezes that guy at second base. So yeah, that's a pretty good weapon to have under these rules.
Yeah, so much of last night's game mirrored what went on Tuesday. There was a little bit more of a rain delay this time. It was about an hour or more. Tuesday's was only about 23 minutes. Talking to Curtis Danberg, late in the game last night, he came over. He said, you know, maybe they pulled the trigger on putting the tarp on the field Tuesday a little bit too early. And maybe Wednesday they waited a little too long, thinking the weather was going to pass over, and they didn't put the tarp on fast enough. So it took them a little while longer to get the field back in shape to restart the game. It's just nothing new, nothing uncommon with this Guardians team this year to be dealing with weather and long delays. But we said that they were able to come through and perform after the delay and still get out there and get after it.
Yeah. 11 doubleheaders, Joe. I mean, 10 of them caused by rain delays, one by COVID. I mean, this is a team that's kind of, they're mutters, man. I guess they like it when it rains, and, they go into extra innings again for the second straight night. They're 13-5 in extra innings this year. And they're playing a team in Tampa Bay that leads all of baseball with, I think, 20 extra inning games. So, these two teams are kind of neck and neck right now.
Yeah, and the similarities are there. They're sort of built the same way, relying on that good, strong bullpen to sort of extend games and keep close games close and come through with those big hits at the end. We saw there was a stretch late in that game where the Tampa's bullpen had struck out, what, seven consecutive Guardians hitters before Stephen Kwan, of course, Stephen Kwan, came through and got a base hit and started churning with the offense again, giving them opportunities. But, we've seen this offense, this Guardians offense, sort of run away and hide a little bit at times during games when it's not the most opportune moment to do so. We're getting into the end of the season with the wildcard playoffs are coming up. They can't be doing this at big moments now for the rest of the season. And I think these last, six, seven games, they need to sort of maintain that intensity so that, when the playoffs start on October 7th, they're not sort of getting caught flat-footed.
Yeah, I think, Tampa Bay kind of presents a pretty unique challenge. Because, we've seen they used nine pitchers in Tuesday's game, and they used just eight or nine yesterday. I mean, last night. And, you know, it seems like, you know, a lot of teams, you know, they'll try to extend at least one or two of their relievers to, you know, an inning plus. But, you know, Cash doesn't do that. He just runs out, you know, like nine straight guys every different inning. So you're getting a different look. And I think it makes it really tough on the hitters to adjust. You know, you never see this same guy twice. So except for the starter, and sometimes the starter's only in there for three or four innings. So, you know, that formula has really worked well for Tampa Bay. And I think that's one of the reasons we haven't seen, you know, we didn't see a lot of offense last night, but, you know, the night before they got 14 hits, but they didn't put, you know, they couldn't get the big hit.
Right. Yeah. The way Cash uses his bullpen, it's pretty unique. You're right. There's no continuity. There's no, like, from at bat to at bat, hitters aren't really aren't able to settle in and, you know what to expect. I wonder if Tito's going to adopt some of that, because we've seen in the past that Tito's open to ideas about different ways to use his bullpen. You know, you talk about not necessarily extending a guy. We saw Eli Morgan got up and down yesterday. I believe he was in for more than an inning. I think he got of work, but he did get the biggest out of the game after they came back from the rain delay with Jose Siri at the plate and the bases loaded. He got the ground ball double play to sort of get out of any sort of trouble without a run scoring.
Yeah, he went 1 2/3, Joe. That's a good call. And that was a great double play, by the way. Tyler Freeman to Andres Jimenez, just really well turned. I mean, it was a great stop by Freeman, great feed by Freeman, and a really, really nice turn by Jimenez.
So what is this set up for this final game of the series tonight? Cal Quantrill will be on the mound, and, you know, we'll get, you know, we'll probably get one more start after this. We've seen in the first two games, Tito has gone maybe just a little bit shorter with Bieber and McKenzie. I think in both games, he said the starter wanted to go back out, could have gone back out for another inning, but he decided at around 90 pitches in both instances, I think, to sort of cut him short. You know, that's got to be with an eye towards, you know, an increased workload in the playoffs. I expect the same out of Quantrill. I mean, he's a guy who gives you 6-7 innings pretty much every start anyways. I don't expect him to go over 100 pitches in this game.
No, I wouldn't expect that either, Joe. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, he's won 14 games. But, you know, yeah, you're right. You know, Bieber and McKenzie, they pitched six innings each in the first two games of this series. I would think Quantrill would go about the same. I mean, this guy, what has he got, a 10-game winning streak, 10-start winning streak, I should say. Hasn't been beaten, has never lost at Progressive Field. So, you know, it's a pretty good bet that, you know, you're going to ride him for at least six. I don't think, but you're not going to overextend him, not with, you know, the possibility that, you know, he's going to pitch maybe what, game three, perhaps in the wild card series.
That's how it lines up. If everything stays on course in terms of, you know, no rainouts or postponements or anything like that. It'd be interesting to see how that goes. And, you know, this, while these games right now, Tito even said yesterday that these games are sort of cosmetic right now, but they're still playing to win. They're still, he wants to keep the intensity where it's been, just so that when the playoffs start, you don't have to push the button. You don't have to flip the switch, because that switch is already flipped, and you just keep going and keep playing the right way, the way that basically got you to steamroll to this division title.
Yeah, I think that's right. Maybe that's why we've seen Class A the last two nights. You know, you want to keep the integrity of the league. I know that sounds trite, but you keep the integrity of the league, of the game, you know, intact by using your best guys against contenders. And hopefully, you know, when, you know, after this last game against the Rays, And then when Kansas City comes to town for six games, you know, you can use Class A a little more judiciously.
What did Arias's performance last night show, if anything, show Tito? I mean, Tito's fond of saying things like, you know, this one game isn't going to define your career or anything like that. But that's usually after a pitcher has a bad game. He said it after Arias hit a 403-foot home run. The story about how his home run ball got back to him, also pretty interesting. Just the night for Arias, what'd you make of it?
Yeah, I thought it was good. You know, we've heard about his power. You know, we've seen it in spring training. You know, he hit 13 home runs in at Columbus this past season. You know, of course, a broken hand kind of got, you know, kind of derailed his season a bit. So we haven't really seen, you know, like a full season from this guy. But, you know, we did last year, and he was certainly impressive. So, you know, I think it was kind of a teaser. You know, it goes, okay, this guy does have some pop. You know, we saw it. You know, it translated to the big leagues. We've seen him play decent, you know, defense. And, you know, we saw, you know, his ability to adjust and, you know, get a bunt down too in a critical situation. So I think all those are, you know, big things. You know, I don't think the home run is this guy going to hit, you know, is he going to hit five home runs in the last seven games? Probably not, but it's got to help him. And I think, you know, probably just confirms what the scouting reports have said about him.
You know, the other nice thing that we saw with Arias there, you know, there's a photo, I believe, Andre not posted, of Ahmed Rosario and Jose Ramirez sort of at the end of the Guardians dugout, coaching and talking and teaching and showing Arias, you know, not just, you know, plays from that specific game, but how to be a big leaguer and, you know, what to do and where to go. And Arias said after the game, you know, those conversations go all the way back to spring training, where the two of them sort of have, you know, taken him under their wing and shown him. And this is a guy who ostensibly is there to take Ahmed Rosario's job. Eventually, you know, they want him to be the shortstop. All indications would be that. But for them to, you know, sort of be training their replacement in some ways, it shows a lot about the leadership that they have. You know, they've done that with Arias. They've done that with Oscar Gonzalez this year. That they've sort of, you know, the young Latin players, when they come up of this group of 16 debuts this year, those are the guys that they sort of gravitate towards in the clubhouse. And it's really worked so far, that these guys have just stepped in seamlessly. And for Arias to be the guy who's, you know, the heir apparent and still be getting treated, you know, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibilities that these veterans would just give him the cold shoulder and say, no, you know, learn it for yourself, rookie. But that's not the case. That's not who Ahmed Rosario and Jose Ramirez have been and who they continue to be in this clubhouse.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think it's a reflection of probably the whole, you know, the coaching staff and Francona, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, kind of rolls downhill. And but it's always nice to see veterans taking care of the rookies and just kind of, you know, point them in the right direction, telling them the do's and don'ts of being a big leaguer. And I guess that's what we're seeing, you know.
Yeah, it makes it easier to give them the old beer shower afterwards as well, in the shower in the clubhouse after the game, after you hit that first home run. The funny part about hitting that first home run, he hit it so hard off the back of the bleachers that it bounced back onto the field, and we're all sitting in the press box, you know, making that hand motion with the almost like a C with your right hand, you know, waving it in the air. Hey, we need the ball. We need the ball. You know, Bart Swain and the guys from the Guardians PR were sort of sending mental messages down to the field, and the ball's laying in left field in between Randy Rosarena and the ball boy. The ball boy goes out, picks it up, and just when you thought he was going to turn and take it back to the dugout, he flipped it to a Rosarena. A Rosarena throws it up into the stands, and now you've got all sorts of problems because the ushers have to go find the fans who got the ball, and then you have to start negotiating with them about what a fair exchange was. And then we find out that You know, they want a signed bat from Arias, and Arias can't do that because he's got certain, you know, contract with the company that supplies his bats, so he can't do that. So would they wind up giving him what in exchange for the home run ball?
They wanted an Andrés Giménez autograph hat and an Andrés Giménez autograph baseball, and they got four tickets for a game next year.
Well, I'd say that's a pretty good. I'd say the fan made out pretty well.
Yeah, that was
instead of the bat. You know, a bat would be nice, but you know, what are you going to do? You're going to hang a bat on the wall or something? I don't know. You get a hat, you get a ball, and you get to come back and maybe see Arias hit another home run next year.
Yeah, that's not bad. They negotiated well.
Now that's pretty good. They made out pretty nice compared to the guy in Toronto who came inches away from catching Aaron Judge's 61st home run that was hit last night. And I think we were all watching it on the scoreboard during the rain delay in Cleveland. They put Judge's at bat up on the scoreboard, and the fans in left field, one of them in a Yankees jersey, one of them in a Blue Jays jersey, and the ball hit the wall just below where they were sitting. They couldn't reach over and catch it. I think both of them had gloves on. Hoynsie, what's your official position on should adult men wear baseball gloves to try and catch balls at a baseball game?
I'm not sure, Joe. I don't.
Come on. No, take a stab. Yes or no? Yes, sir. Would you ever wear a glove to a ball game?
No. No, I
okay.
would not.
Well, if you I'm wouldn't
ducking.
Do it, then.
I'm ducking if a ball comes near me.
I have seen you. You don't even flinch. Balls come back in the press box. And in fact, last homestand, ball almost clobbered you in the head. You didn't even flinch. I have that ball sitting on my desk right now because we collected it with a dustpan after it was, it stopped on the ledge there. But how many times in your career have you almost gotten nailed by foul balls?
There's been a lot. The old press box at Cleveland Stadium was notorious for that. You were right on top of home plate, and that was dangerous. I was up there with Rush Snyder once, and we both ducked. We ducked the same way, and Russ got hit in the head with a foul ball. So yeah, I make sure the computer screen is down, and then I scramble. Man, I'm getting out of the way.
Well, I've heard that Baltimore's press box is pretty close, and that's dangerous. In Minnesota, during the last road trip, former intern from with Cleveland, Nina Zimmerman, who works in the PR department in Minnesota, she got out of the way of a foul ball that came screaming back. It hit the wall behind her and actually broke the wall, left a dent in the wall behind her. We were all kind of shaken up by that because if she hadn't moved, she would have been in some serious trouble. But as far as wearing a glove to a game, I think if you're in a hot zone, now that they have the netting up, I don't think you can use the excuse of protecting yourself. If you're far enough away where you're in the outfield, you got to try and catch with your bare hands. I caught a home run, a foul home run ball from Robbie Alomar in, 1993 at the stadium. Caught it with my bare hands. So, yeah, I mean, if I can catch that barehanded, I think there's no excuse for wearing a glove. But my favorite part of that was the reaction of this guy knowing that the Judge's 61st home run ball would have been probably worth something to somebody. I think the offer is out there for the 62nd ball. It would be like $2 million to any fan who catches it. But I'd seen that on Twitter somewhere. But, you know, the 61st ball, that just tied the record. So I don't think it would be worth as much. But the guy knew that he had missed out on a payday, and he sort of visibly pouted for the rest of the night, you know, you know, throwing his hat and, you know, slamming his glove all over the place. It was it kind of fun to watch, fans in other cities get frustrated like that.
that you're right, Joe. That was a big payday one way or the other. Those collectors would really, they'd be paying a lot of money for that, for sure.
Well, I would tell you this. If Zach Hempel was standing next to me and caught Judge's second 60-second home run ball, I would just immediately punch him in the nose and take the ball. That's just that guy ripping balls from, like, you know, 12-year-old girls, I think is a an abomination that should not be tolerated in baseball. I think the ushers at Yankee Stadium are like on alert for the guy and told not to let him, you know, act like that for, you know, just for the good of the game, because it's not a good look. Zach Hempel, obviously the notorious baseball collector and thief in a lot of situations. All right, that's going to wrap it up for tonight's Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We will catch you again tomorrow.